This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Isaiah. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in Isaiah chapter 40 with this edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
He then tells us he brings the princes to nothing. He makes the judges of the earth useless. Scarcely shall they be planted, scarcely shall they be sown. Scarcely shall their stock take root in the earth, when he will also blow on them and they will wither, and the whirlwind will take them away like stubble. To whom then will you liken me, or to whom shall I be equal, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high and see who has created these things, who brings out their host by number, who calls them all by name, by the greatness of his might and the strength of his power. Not one is missing. He says, why trust in man when the God that you serve is so grand and so great? How often we forget. But here God says, if you want to behold my majesty, my greatness, look up at the host, at the heavenly host. Psalm 147 verse 4 tells us, he counts the number of the stars. He calls them all by name. Here God says, look up at the stars in the sky, at the host of heaven. Behold what I have created and what I have named. Astronomers say that our galaxy contains 100 billion stars. There are 100 million galaxies in known space. Known space is 1 billionth of theoretical space. Thus, if we take just our galaxy, the Milky Way, and we set out to count the stars in our galaxy, if we counted one star per second, it would take us 2,500 years to count all the stars that are just in our own galaxy. And yet God knows and has named all the stars in all the galaxies all across the universe. God's intellect is infinite. There is not a speck of dust in the most remotest corner in all the universe that he doesn't know its history. And yet men worship idols? How insane! And modern man has the most ludicrous idol of all. He worships chance, randomness. Evolution suggests that this amazing, orderly universe that we inhabit, all spun into existence by a string of accidents. At least the ancients believed in something, not nothing. Verse 27 tells us, why do you say, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel? My way is hidden from the Lord, and my just claim is passed over by my God. You see, Israel had accused God of being unfair, of forsaking his people. Have you not known, have you not heard, the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, neither faints nor is weary? His understanding is unsearchable. They've accused God of being unfair. Often God doesn't tell us what he's up to, but that doesn't mean he's not up to something. He is always vigilant. He tells us here he never faints, he never grows weary. God has a plan. You can trust that he does. We just don't always see the details. And then verse 29 tells us, he gives power to the weak, and to those who have no might, he increases strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Human prowess, it diminishes. Our bodies are like a battery. They run down after a while. They lose their juice. Even a young man grows faint and weary. But the Lord is like a wall outlet. Just plug into the Lord. He becomes a continuous source of energy. We're told, wait on the Lord. The Hebrew word wait, it means to connect, to twist together. In other words, get in sync with God, and he will renew your strength. You'll run and not faint. You'll soar on wings like eagles. As the man said, we can soar with the eagles or we can run with the turkeys. It's up to us. Chapter 41. Keep silence before me, O coastlands, and let the people renew their strength. Let them come near, then let them speak. Let us come near together for judgment. Now, in chapter 40, verse 27, Israel had accused God of letting them down. This sounds like the Jews today, does it not? They claim that God has forsaken them. They point to the Spanish Inquisitions or to the Russian pogroms or to Hitler's Holocaust. They talk about how he ignored their prayers. He turned a deaf ear to their plight. And yet here the Lord calls his people together. It's time to sit down, he says. It's time for us to settle this issue. Let us come near together for judgment. And here God's words to them are more anticipatory than they are historical. You know, remember, Isaiah's writing in the wake of Emmanuel's conquest over the Assyrians around the year 700 BC. But God is going to raise up the Babylonians to judge Judah for its sin. And for 70 years, the Jews will be taken captive to Babylon. It will feel like God has abandoned them. And they will need the assurances of Isaiah there in Babylon. Verse 2 tells us, "Who raised up one from the east? Who in righteousness called him to his feet? Who gave the nations before him and made him rule over kings? Who gave them as the dust to his sword, as driven stubble to his bow? Who pursued them and passed safely by the way that he had not gone with his feet?" Now don't get confused here with Isaiah's use of the past tense. God, remember, is outside of the physical dimension that we call time. When we say God is eternal, we're not saying that he has lots of time. We're saying that he exists outside of time. Isaiah 57, verse 15, will speak of God as the high and lofty one who inhabits eternity, from eternity past to eternity future. God sees the end from the beginning. This is how he can write of future things as if they've already happened. He can write of future things in the past tense. And here Isaiah is writing in the past tense about a scenario still future. The Jews in Babylon are basically crying out, "Why, God, have you forsaken us?" And God says he hasn't. In fact, he says that he will raise up a deliverer, here one from the east. This is the first mention of a person that will actually be mentioned by name in chapter 44 and 45. It's the first mention of the Persian king Cyrus. We're going to learn a lot more about him in the next two chapters, let's just say chapters 44 and 45. There, Isaiah will mention him by name, but he was the Persian king who ended up conquering Babylon and who set the Jews free and allowed them to come home. In fact, his first decree was to finance their return to Jerusalem. And yet here, 170 years in advance, Isaiah speaks to the Jews in Babylon and he assures them of a deliverer from the east. He says that even in Judah's darkest days, God will never abandon his people, punish and purify them, yes, but he already has a plan for their deliverance. Verse 4, who has performed and done it, calling the generations from the beginning? I, the Lord, am the first, and with the last I am he. Notice, who can predict the future? Who is capable of writing history before the events even unfold? Only Yahweh. Only the great I Am. And here he's called the first and the last. God stands simultaneously at the dawn and at the twilight of time. This statement about God is strategic. In Revelation 22, verse 13, there Jesus says, "I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, the first and the last." Wait a minute, there can only be one first and last. Thus, it means that if Yahweh and Jesus are both first and last, then they must be the same person. And here is a great proof text for the deity of Jesus. Notice verse 5. The coastlands saw it and feared. The ends of the earth were afraid. They drew near and came. Everyone helped his neighbor and said to his brother, "Be of good courage." Everyone was encouraged when Cyrus the Persian took the throne. He says, so the craftsman encouraged the goldsmith. He who smooths with the hammer inspired him who strikes the anvil, saying, It is ready for the soldering. Then he fastened it with pegs that it might not totter. In soldering Israel to Persia, God gave the Jews stability when they needed it most. He says, but you, Israel, are my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the descendants of Abraham, my friend. And here's an amazing title. The title that God gives to Abraham, he calls him my friend. How would you like it for God to refer to you as my friend? Pretty amazing. Well, guess what? He has. He has called you his friend. You remember in John 15, verse 15, we learn this is how Jesus sees us, how he sees all his disciples. There Jesus said, no longer do I call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends. For all things that I heard from my Father, I have made known to you. Oh, we need to be reminded that Jesus saved us, not just to make us his servants, but to make us his friends. He's much more interested in our friendship than he is our service. Remember, he saved you for fellowship with you. And then verse 9, you whom I have taken from the ends of the earth and called from its farthest regions and said to you, you are my servant. I have chosen you and have not cast you away. Notice God's promise to Israel. He will never cast the Jews away. He will keep who he has chosen. And this puts to death what is being taught today in theological circles and is known as replacement theology. The idea that God is through with Israel, that he's taken all of the promises that he made to Israel and he's transferred them to the church. That is a heretical doctrine. And it contradicts verse 9 here in Isaiah. He says, fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Yes, I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. What a safe place to be in God's righteous right hand. Behold, all those who were incensed against you shall be ashamed and disgraced. They shall be as nothing, and those who strive with you shall perish. And those that have strove against Israel are quite a group. Quite a number of people have been incensed against Israel. Predominantly the whole earth. And yet God is going to bring them to shame and disgrace. You shall seek them and not find them, those who contended with you. Those who war against you shall be as nothing, as a non-existent thing. For I, the Lord your God, will hold your right hand, saying to you, fear not, I will help you. Boy, this echoes God's promise to Abraham in Genesis 12, verse 2. I will make you a great nation. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. And as far as I'm concerned, this is one of the primary reasons God has been so good to our country. Over the years, it's blessed the United States. It's because we've chosen to bless those that God blessed. We've supported Israel. And we turn our back on Israel to our own peril. He says, fear not, you worm Jacob, you men of Israel. I will help you, says the Lord and your Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. Even this worm Jacob, God says he will help. It's interesting, God refers to his people as Jacob. And you remember this man Jacob, he was a worm. He was a slippery, slimy thing. He was a double crosser, was he not? He tried to steal the birthright from his older brother Esau. And throughout their history, whenever the nation Israel has acted dishonestly, they're being a Jacob. And yet you remember God changed Jacob's name to what? To Israel, to Prince of God. And thus, whenever the nation acts nobly, they're in Israel. Whether Jacob or Israel, God promises to be with them. His protection of them, his support of them is unconditional. Verse 15, behold, I will make you into a new threshing sledge with sharp teeth. You shall thresh the mountains and beat them small and make the hills like chaff. You shall winnow them. The wind shall carry them away, and the whirlwind shall scatter them. You shall rejoice in the Lord and glory in the Holy One of Israel. Israel will receive a winnowing fork that will spread out the mountains, that will toss the high hills. Israel will become mighty. He says, the poor and needy seek water, but there is none. Their tongues fail for thirst. I, the Lord, will hear them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. I will open rivers in desolate heights and fountains in the midst of the valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water and the dry lands springs of water. I will plant in the wilderness the cedar and the acacia tree, the myrtle and the oil tree. I will set in the desert the cypress tree and the pine and the box tree together. All these trees are foreign to the area. They'll all be transplanted there, that they may see and know and consider and understand together that the hand of the Lord has done this and the Holy One of Israel has created it. God will turn the wilderness into a forest. He'll show the nation Israel that he has not forsaken them. And then verse 21, present your case, says the Lord. Bring forth your strong reasons, says the King of Jacob. God has made his case. He's proven why he hasn't forsaken Israel. Now he challenges their idols to present their cases for how God has been unfaithful. He says, let them bring forth and show us what will happen. Let them show the former things, what they were, that we may consider them and know the latter end of them, or declare to us things to come. Show the things that are to come hereafter, that we may know that you are gods. Yes, do good or do evil, that we may be dismayed and see it together. Yahweh is calling for the idols of the people to forecast the future, like he's done. Let's see how they do in their predictions. Indeed, you are nothing, and your work is nothing. He who chooses you is an abomination. These idols, they do neither good nor evil. They do nothing. They're impotent. Just sticks and stones. And the person who follows them is an abomination, he says. He's a despicable thing. He says, I have raised up one from the north, and he shall come. From the rising of the sun, he shall call on my name, and he shall come against princes as though mortar, as the potter treads clay. Now Cyrus, remember, he was the one who came from the east, but this deliverer comes from the north. It hearkens us back to Psalm chapter 75, verse 6. There we're told, exaltation comes neither from the east, nor from the west, nor from the south. But God is judge. He puts down one and exalts another. Notice, promotion doesn't come from east, west, or south. It comes from the Lord. Now, a few of us Southerners will hate this, but the inference is that God occupies the north. Isaiah 14, verse 13, places God's throne on the farthest sides of the north. Leviticus 1, verse 11, tells us that the burnt offering was always to be sacrificed on the north side of the altar, before the Lord. Apparently, God's dwelling is in the north. So, who is this deliverer from the north? He says, who has declared from the beginning that we may know in former times that we may say he is righteous? In other words, who is from the start? Who is righteous? Surely there is no one who shows. Surely there is no one who declares. Surely there is no one who hears your words. The first time I said to Zion, look, there they are. And I will give to Jerusalem one who brings good tidings. Of course, the deliverer from the north is none other than Jesus. He came the first time bringing good tidings, Isaiah tells us. Good news. The problem is the people didn't listen. No one heard his words. Verse 28, for I looked and there was no man. I looked among them, but there was no counselor. Who, when I asked of them, could answer a word? Indeed, they are all worthless. Their works are nothing. Their molded images are wind and confusion. Jesus came the first time bringing good tidings, but no one heard him. Folks were too busy pursuing worthless things. And the same mistake is being made today. Chapter 42 tells us, behold, my servant whom I uphold, my elect one in whom my soul delights, I have put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the Gentiles. Now to this point in Isaiah, the phrase, my servant, has been a reference to the nation of Israel. But here, notice the servant of Yahweh is identified by a personal pronoun. I have put my spirit upon him. He's now talking about a person. And from this point forward, we're going to learn more and more about Yahweh's servant until the prophecy crescendos in chapter 53, where there Isaiah will give us a description of the suffering servant dying on the cross. He'll describe the crucifixion of Jesus in such detail that you'd think we were reading an eyewitness report of the actual events, rather than a prophecy written 700 years beforehand. Verse 2 tells us, of Jesus, servant of Yahweh, he will not cry out or raise his voice, nor cause his voice to be heard in the street. And this wasn't the Jesus style, was it? He wasn't loud, he wasn't boisterous. John was the voice crying from the wilderness, not Jesus. Oh, Jesus impressed folks not by his volume, but by his content, with what he said, not with how he said it. Verse 3, a bruised reed he will not break, and smoking flax he will not quench. He will bring forth justice for truth. In Matthew 12, this verse is quoted of Jesus. This is his approach to the weak and to the wounded. And tonight, if you're a bruised reed, if you've been crippled or weakened or bent against your will, if your once tall stalk now droops over, or if you're smoking flax, if you feel like you're burned out and exhausted, that if I looked in your heart tonight, I'd find the dying embers of a once roaring fire. If you're a smoking flax, if you're a bruised reed, understand Jesus doesn't push you aside. He doesn't throw you away. Oh, no, no, no. A bruised reed he will not break. Smoking flax he will not quench. Jesus wants to be to you a splint and a flint. He wants you to stake your life to his. He has strength that you need. His strength will prop you up until your little strength becomes strong again. Ask him and he'll fan the flame of your dying embers. He'll rekindle passion in your life, and in your ministry, and even in your marriage. Rather than punish people for growing weak or turning cold, he breathes new life into tired people. Jesus revives the love and hope that had almost died out. This is how Jesus treats people. Remember the good shepherd. Jesus is the good shepherd. And thus he treats his flock like pregnant lambs with kid gloves. And you know, if we want to be like Jesus, this is how we'll learn to treat other people in his name. Well, then verse 4, he will not fail nor be discouraged till he has established justice in the earth, and the coastlands shall wait for his law. And again, this is prophetic of Jesus. He will not fail. You might get discouraged, but not Jesus. He will not fail until he has established justice in the earth. Thus says God the Lord, who created the heavens and stretched them out, who spread forth the earth and that which comes from it, he who gives breath to the people on it and spirit to those who walk on it. I, the Lord, have called you in righteousness and will hold your hand. I will keep you and give you as a covenant to the people, as a light to the Gentiles, to open blind eyes, to bring out prisoners from the prison, and those who sit in darkness from the prison house. And again, all of this is prophetic of Jesus.
You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams, here at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is teaching his way through the book of Isaiah for much of Israel's history in the Old Testament. The Israelites had wavered back and forth between serving God and serving false gods such as Baal. Isaiah rebukes the people for foolishly bowing down to idols, which were made by human hands that can't see, talk, or move. It's because of Israel's idolatry that God sent them into exile. In our Western culture, we may not bow down to any carved statues, but idols are still alive and well. An idol is anything that takes the place of God in our hearts and lives, such as money, fame, a career, or a relationship. God commands us to have no other gods or idols before Him. Are there any idols in your life that you need to submit to God? If you enjoyed this message and want to hear more, just visit our website at sandyadams.org. While you're there, check out Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain under the About tab. If you're in the Atlanta area, why not come visit us? We have services at 9:15 and 11:15 a.m. every Sunday. There's more information and directions at sandyadams.org. That's about all we have time for today, but we look forward to continuing this study with you in the book of Isaiah. Thanks for listening to Sandy Adams Radio.